Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Ah, crap! I almost forgot! Wait! Chaw! I was saving it for a good time!
What is it?
Big Chief! The best!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Hey, check this out. Lou Gehrig's pants. Not a bad fit. Hey, you don't think that nerve disease of his was contagious, do you? Better take him off. I'm too important to this team. Big Stein can't be flopping and twitching.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Let's have a smell, all right? Ooh, wafting, wafting. Oh, everyone likes their own brand, don't they? This is magic.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Hour one is at 1080thefan.com, the Les Schwab Tires podcast. A loaded second hour, but we kick it off with a friend of the show, Brian Windhorst, obviously covering the NBA for ESPN. You'll see him all over TV with the playoffs starting now. He's also the author of the new book, The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete, LeBron Inc. And he joins us now on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. Brian, we get you a couple times a year. We always appreciate when you have a couple minutes for us here in Portland. I do want to start with a semi-personal question. I read a story about you that was quite good and just kind of your journey and what you do for a living. And I noticed that it said you live in Omaha, Nebraska. And I'm curious, why Omaha, Nebraska?
It's America's heartland, right in the middle of all the NBA action. Why wouldn't you? Nonstop flight to Portland anytime you need to get to see Dame.
Okay, good to know.
My wife is from here, and when we decided to have a family, you know, I travel a lot, so we needed family support. And I actually love it here, and it's a great quality of life. And it is actually very, you know, the two hubs that we have, you know, for ESPN are, you know, New York and L.A. and Bristol, and it takes about the same time to get to both of them. So, and now with technology where you can do television out of your house, it actually is not terribly inconvenient as much as, you know, one might think.
There you go. Yeah, I got some family in Omaha. It's a nice little town. You know, the Lakers have been at the forefront of the media landscape now for the last couple of days. And then LeBron's reaction to it has been interesting as well. What did you make of the Magic Johnson quitting on national television, not tell anybody? He had a meeting with LeBron, it sounded like, a couple of days earlier, didn't say anything to him. What did you make of that whole mess?
Yeah, I mean, at the meeting with LeBron, I mean, I wasn't there, but from what I'm told, you know, they were talking about, like, you know, moves for next season, talking about the coaching decision that was coming up, things of that nature. Certainly, nobody left that meeting thinking that Magic was in his last hours on the job. And, you know, I don't know exactly what Magic's motivation was. I mean, I can guess, and my guess would be that the next 8 to 10 weeks, for the, whoever is running the Lakers are going to be super challenging. You obviously have the coaching decision, which has now been thrown into flux. He was going to fire Luke. You have the draft pick, which, you know, it's kind of in a tough spot. They're at 11th. You know, this draft is not really considered that deep, so you're going to have some pressure there. Mm-hmm. You would obviously have to maybe think about something you could do to get back in the Anthony Davis trade talks, even if you could. And then you have free agency, where they're at best, I think, the second choice for a lot of the top free agents. So you better have plan B, C, and D ready to go at a moment's notice. And you would need to be like a grade A on their game executive to execute all those things well. And frankly, I don't know if Magic had the stomach to do it, knowing that he may not be able to execute it well. And, you know, he's a confident man. I certainly don't doubt that. But he's a successful businessman, wonderful philanthropist, obviously one of the greatest basketball players we've ever seen. Not a great basketball executive, and you need a great basketball executive. So I really think, as crazy as it was when it happened, I think he gave the Lakers a gift, to be honest.
Well, and it's not like, by the way, Brian Windhorst is joining us now. The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete, LeBron Inc. It's his new book. It's in stores. We just got our copy yesterday. Can't wait to dive into it. It's not like I'm necessarily breaking news to you, Brian, but they just sent a press release out. They have parted ways with Luke Walton, so now there is no coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. Rob Pelinka.
Well, they said they mutually agreed to part ways, which makes me wonder if Luke has something else that he's interested in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of NBA jobs that are open. And, you know, I think the thing for Luke Walton would be, you know, if he was remained as coach, if I were him, I would have said, I have to have a contract extension, you know, not just for the money, but I have to have support. And so again, that was a big decision. Maybe the Lakers weren't in position to make it. And like I said, he may have another job. Relatively so.
Well, on this front with LeBron and your book, I think is kind of highlighting what's going on both in his professional life and then like his business life, right? Like where he's got this great corporation, this big brand that he's working by himself with partners, with Nike, everything. But he's an accomplished athlete who is still playing, and his team just completely crumbled this year. And most people point the finger at him and his buddy for the whole Anthony Davis situation. Is he basically kind of just, I'm on the Lakers because I want to be in LA and I care more about business at this point. How do you really kind of separate those two? Because it just seems very un-LeBron based on what we've seen in his career, where basketball almost feels secondary for him.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think the decision to go back to Cleveland was a basketball decision. The Cavs, I mean, they had a lot of promise, but they were not a good team. He went back because that was a family decision and a reputation decision, not 100% basketball. But I absolutely agree with you that there's no way that coming to the Lakers was all about basketball. Now, he may not say that because people can use it against him. Mm-hmm. If it was all about basketball, he had gone maybe to Houston or Philadelphia, where there were, you know, even Denver. Denver was begging to get a meeting with him. Mm-hmm. And think about where Denver would be. I mean, not that I ever saw him, but he didn't want to live in Denver. He didn't want to live, in Houston or Philadelphia. He wanted to live in L.A. So, you know, I think it cannot be a basketball decision and not be necessarily a sin against the game, because I think that's happened before.
Yeah. And I mean, can you blame him for something like that, too? I mean, a guy who had been through so much from Cleveland and then running out, and then the owner, the way he commented, winning in Miami, then coming home, winning a title in Cleveland. Like, one, can you blame him? And then two, did you see, like, you've been around him closer than anybody. Did you see a move like this coming before maybe the rest of the national landscape picked up on it?
Oh, my God. I mean, if you were paying attention, you could see him going to L.A. for at least a year, maybe longer. It was just a matter of how the Cavs season ended. But you know, the thing about it is, and we're seeing this a little bit in Golden State, when you compete for championships for year after year after year, there's like a tax that you pay. In a lot of cases, some of the most enjoyable seasons for organizations are seasons in which they're rebuilding. You talk to executives and stuff, you know, when there's no pressure. I mean, one of the reasons why Dwayne Wade had this wonderful season this year was because he was no expectations. He was like, I'm retiring. I know my team's not going anywhere. Let's go have fun every night. And the Heat did. They had fun every night. But guess what? They're done. Who do you think had more fun this season, the Heat or the Celtics?
The Celtics.
You know, like, I mean, so like playing for championships is hard and it wears you out. And you could just, you know, I got this sense in Miami, absolutely, and got the sense in Cleveland, too. And I don't know, maybe it's Golden State's been fighting it like hell for the last 2 years, trying to avoid getting worn out.
Yeah. Brian Windhorst, ESPN, our guest. His new book, The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete, LeBron Inc., is out today in bookstores. You've been around LeBron your entire career. I mean, it started there in Akron and in Ohio and covering him then, and obviously now you're a national reporter for the NBA. I'm really curious your thoughts on the GM position, because there's some people, and look, this is just message board stuff, but I feel like I kind of want to know the answer in your opinion. Where would you put Neil Olshey on candidates the Lakers would or should call for that position, or does that not fit where maybe LeBron and that team are aiming for?
So here's the thing about LeBron and personnel decisions. I think people have got two things very wrong about it. Number one, I think there's this belief that there's a black and white thing. LeBron likes this guy, or LeBron wants this guy fired. LeBron wants this guy traded. LeBron wants to get traded for this guy. That's not how it works. And that's not how it works because of LeBron's decision. LeBron doesn't want to marry himself to a coach, because there have been teams and there have been times in the past, especially in Cleveland, where the Cavs would have loved it if LeBron would have given an ironclad opinion on a coach, because that way they would have known he would have married himself to the guy, and he wouldn't passively, aggressively praise him and undercut him over the next time during his tenure. And that's what's just so off about, about the way he's portrayed. If you're gonna criticize LeBron for something, criticize him for being passive aggressive. Don't criticize him for hiring and firing guys. Now, have there been times where he said, "Yeah, I want that guy on my team. Go get him." Yes. Have there been times when he said, "I don't want to trade for that guy"? Yes. But it's all areas of gray. And if you may say to yourself, "Well, how does LeBron get to have the right to sometimes care and sometimes not?" Well, welcome to LeBron exceptionalism. When you're that good, you can play it that way. The other thing I think that you have to understand is that LeBron doesn't make decisions based on who the coach is or who the general manager is. When he went to Miami, he didn't go to Miami to play for Eric Spoelstra. He tells the story. I don't happen to believe this story, but he tells the story that when he re-signed in Cleveland in 2014, that he didn't even know who the GM was. I don't buy that. I think he probably knows the name of every NHL GM. But, granted, he has a role in all of that. But to get back to Neil O'Shea, Neil is very well respected. He's done a very good job drafting. He does a very good job with the small moves. You know, he's thorough, and he does, just like the way that they acquired Nurkic, the drafting of CJ McCollum, obviously getting Dame, look at Jake Layman, getting a guy like that, picking up Cantor. It was a really smart move. He wins a lot of moves. Obviously, because of his history in Los Angeles, I think he's on the list. And frankly, if the Lakers called about Neil O'Shea, it would be a good move, because I think what the Lakers need to do is to find a GM who's an expert at the job and not somebody who has a great relationship with the Buss family. I think that needs to pass on. So I think he would be on the list, but I don't think necessarily he'd be at the top of the list.
Mm. Well, since we have you, I am curious to ask, that series for Portland starts on Sunday, Blazers and Thunder. It's a fun rivalry. We hate Westbrook, as most NBA cities do that aren't Oklahoma City. How do you see that series going?
Oh man, is this going to be? I think it's going to be a great series. Both teams finished very strong. Now we have Paul George with a shoulder injury. We don't really know where that's going. That's certainly something to watch, because I think, just guessing here, I think having watched what happened last year in the series, my guess would be that the Thunder are going to try to really clamp on Dame, and the fact that he's missing his dream pick and roll partner is going to affect it. And Drew Holiday was at the top of his defensive game with the way he played Dame last year. I don't know if they have the same personnel. Wouldn't stun me if late in games, if they just put Paul George right on him to try to have his length affect him. And so the question to me is, one, what's the antidote for that? What does Terry Stotts have ready for when they attack Dame? Two, when they open the door for Evan Turner to create, when they open the door for CJ, is CJ going to be healthy enough to deliver? I think that's going to be the crux of the series. When they clamp on Dame, what is going to happen? And, the other thing is the Blazers have to play well at home. I was at game one last year. I was stunned by that outcome. The Blazers, one of their greatest strengths is their home court. They got to get ahead. They got to play from ahead, because I know that if they fall behind in the series, last year is going to weigh on them. They can say that it's not, but how could it not? So I'm excited about the series. I think Westbrook and Dame will have their moments. That's what I want to see. As a fan of basketball, I want to see Dame drain shots on Russ and gesticulate and make and give that stare. And I want to see Russ come back and score on Dame or set guys up and him give that grimace. That's what you want from a playoff series.
Absolutely. Brian Windhorst, your new book, man, The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete, LeBron Inc. Congratulations. It's such an achievement to get a book in life. This is another book for you. I can't wait to dive in. And I know we didn't dive in too much with the book itself, but if you have any free time this summer, we can reach out. We'd love to have you back on just to talk about a billion-dollar athlete and what goes into all of that. Sorry we didn't dive completely into it, but we appreciate the insight and info, man, and we appreciate the time here in Portland.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, there we go. Brian Windhorst, his new book, The Making of a Billion-Dollar Athlete. He's going to have all the insights and info about how LeBron became LeBron. By the way, a lot to get to. We can react to what he just told us there. We also have some breaking news that we need to address.
We do.
Coming up next on 1080 The Fan. Our thanks again to Brian Windhorst for hopping on. I could listen to him talk about basketball all day.
I could too, man.
We have a little bit of breaking news we need to pass along. It came at the end of that interview. Although it is about 15 minutes old, so apologies. We just saw it now.
Yeah, sure. We were roped into the interview.
Draft Express is the, and it's not even close, the website you should go to for all NBA mock drafts. And their guy, Jonathan Gavoni.
I think it's Gavoni.
Yeah. He does a great job. He covers everybody internationally and all the college kids. He tweeted that Louis King from Oregon has officially hired an agent.
Yeah.
He is gone from Oregon after just 1 year. I'm not really shocked at all. I don't know if Duck fans are. He's a five-star prospect. Look, this draft, and you heard Windhorst say it, this draft is not deep. Like, after the first six guys,
sure,
it kind of opens up. So we may not think he's ready. You may not think he's ready. Louis King has a few good workouts. This kid might be able to sneak in within the top 20 to 23 in the NBA draft. He's what, 6'6", 6'7"? He can shoot the rock. He's only 19 years old.
Yeah.
He can put weight on. He's kind of the prototypical 3-and-D type player that a team will be looking to try to build around or have a piece to build with.
Yeah, I mean, the Oregon had their four guys launch their, what'd you call them, exploratory committees, Bull Bull, Louis King, Wooten, and Pritchard. I kind of was expecting the whole time for King and Bull to be gone, Wooten and Pritchard to be back, and we'll see if that ends up turning out to be right. Whether he's ready or not, the answer is no. He's not ready for the NBA. Just like Troy Brown wasn't ready for the NBA, but when you put this decision in front of a kid, how do they say no?
Right.
Like if you saw Troy Brown, I think is a prime example of this, a guy who came in highly touted recruit, little underwhelming. They didn't have the season success last year that they did this past season. He was the 15th overall pick in the draft.
Made the right decision,
right? I mean,
he made the right decision,
a lottery pick right there. So of course he's going to make that jump at that opportunity. Louis King saw something like that. You mentioned the draft being not deep after five or six guys. He's going to end up probably being taken somewhere in the top 20. And you also add on top that he had a good run at the end of the year. Like without him, you don't sniff a Pac-12 title championship in the tournament. You don't sniff a Sweet 16 appearance. He was their driving force. Outside of Pritchard, he was the guy that they could rely on night in and night out to put some shots up and score consistently. So I think he can ultimately turn into a good NBA player. He doesn't have the body. He doesn't have enough weight on him. And I think he does need more experience in order to have a big impact at the next level. But you show these guys they have a path to be a lottery pick or a top 20 pick in the NBA draft, they're going to take it every time.
On the Windhorst stuff, because again, we didn't dive too much into the book. I actually felt really bad about that. But I think the book title is pretty self-explanatory, and you know Windhorst is one of the best sports writers out there, so you know there's going to be really good insight on it. The LeBron coaching news came out of Luke Walton and the Lakers mutually agree to part ways. He might be on his way to Sacramento because Sacramento really wants Luke Walton. And now there's an opening, and the rumors have already come out that it's Ty Lue or it's Monty Williams. Everybody, of course, tweeting the proverbial LeBron gets another guy fired stuff, but you know, Windhorst had an interesting insight there where he doesn't marry himself to coaches, but he also wants nothing to do with the decisions. Nobody believes that. And it's interesting with him as like this child prodigy who has become one of the greats all time in this league, multi-champion, multi-MVP, and now he's building a billion-dollar brand and corporation basically under his name. People will never change their thinking on different things with him, no matter what. You know, if he's in the middle of an amazing, unexplainable run of taking a team of scrubs to the finals, in the moment, everybody's like, oh, my God, he's amazing. And then if they lose in 4 or 5, it's like, eh, he sucks. He's overrated.
Right.
Or like this example here where a coach leaves. Is he responsible? I'm sure there's some responsibility on LeBron, for sure. But like narratives that exist about him, they will never change no matter what.
No. Well, and Windhorst would know. He's as plugged in as anybody when it comes to LeBron. So I trust his two cents on certain things like that. His line about not knowing the Cavs GM was pretty funny when Horst said he didn't believe that one. I don't blame Luke Walton for wanting to get out of L.A. either.
Me either.
Like, that thing was a dumpster fire. Like, first off, he had to deal with LeVar Ball before LeBron even got there. So that whole nonsense is going on. The team president just quit on national TV. Your GM is a former agent who has no experience being a GM.
He's more qualified to be Rob Lowe's body double than he is the GM.
You got
to
deal with LeBron and all the stuff that goes with dealing with LeBron. Like, man, no thanks. I'm one out. And if you're Luke Walton and one, you know, you're probably going to get fired next year if you have a disappointing season again. Two, you don't know what the offseason is going to look like and what guys are going to come or not come to Los Angeles. And he's seeing the reports out there, and I guarantee his agent's hearing it, that there's other teams around the league that want him. Like, Sacramento just fired Jaeger, who they were like 13 wins over their Vegas over-under. Sacramento was one of the surprise stories and a great story in the NBA this year, and they fired him because Vlade Divac wants more control. That's the first guy they want to go after is Luke Walton. So if I'm Walton, I know my name's going to be out there to go maybe be a part of other more coachable teams. Peace out. I'm gone too.
Well, also just it might be a better quality of life. Like LA sure. is better than Sacramento. I've been to Sacramento. It's not that great, but you get De'Aaron Fox. You get Marvin Bagley.
And
Buddy
they're
going to
get another okay, not great, but okay draft pick this year.
But you have an overachieving, up-and-coming young team. Man, if you go in there and they start playing well next year, I bet you just being around that kind of energy is so much better for your health than being around the toxic nature that is the Los Angeles Lakers right now.
Yeah.
What do you think about Neil Olshey as a possible GM selection? I don't think he's going to get that gig, but what do you think about their GM role? And should Neil maybe get more consideration from the Lakers?
Well, one of the guys who thinks we're just Blazer haters, I did enjoy, he texted in during that interview and said, do you die a little inside every time you hear a national writer say that Neil Olshey is respected? No, the answer to that. We know that he's respected around the league. I also enjoyed Windhorse's kind of backhanded compliment.
He said nice little moves.
He's good. He's more respected around the league. He's good at the little stuff, you know, like Jake Layman and, you know, signing Cantor, the little move. What do the Lakers need? Yeah,
they need big moves.
They need big moves. Maybe Olshey can pull. It's L.A. Like, it's obviously easier to pull off a big move in Los Angeles than when LeBron James is on your team.
He's been to L.A. too.
He's been. He knows the L.A. landscape. He was with the Clippers. He did some great things with the Clippers. I think his name's going to be involved. I don't think he's going to end up getting the job. But, I think his banner around his name, sure.
On that point, like, the people who... And I kind of don't blame you for the opinion, but think we hate Neil Olshey. I've tried to do as best a job as I could within the context of conversations to explain. I don't hate Neil Olshey. I find him incredibly unlikable as a personality type with media.
Yeah.
I don't think he's fair to fans nor the media.
If I'm
a fan and I'm not in this job, I would like to hear more from my general manager about
Absolutely.
What the blueprint is
right.
outside of the one interview I schedule with my own news corporation.
Right. And you give written, here's what you can ask me.
He is really good at draft evaluation.
Yeah.
I know Zach Collins might not be a favorite, and obviously Biggie wasn't the best pick when he got picked. But Simons is obviously showing you why there is some promise there.
Sure.
CJ, he hit. Dame, he hit.
And nobody hits at 100%.
No.
You got a bat above 500, and you're going to be just fine in the draft.
I think his Aminu deal, he doesn't get nearly enough credit for that move.
Nurkic in the cheap contract, it sucks now with the injury, but that was a great deal for most of the year.
So, like, Windhorse's point, when you say the little moves, I think he is a really good GM in that sense. And maybe this is as best as Portland's ever going to get from a general manager's standpoint. But on that note... My biggest complaint with him is he suffers from what Roethlisberger does. There's not an accountability. There is not an acceptance or feeding us what the reality of the situation is. I mean, before the story came out, we were just under the assumption the entire organization bifurcated. The story comes out, the owner did not bifurcate.
No.
So I think there's the whole lying thing bugs me. And also just not the ability to move on. And say, you know what? I drafted this guy, but maybe it benefits us more if we move him. And obviously, you guys know who I'm talking about here. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know if he's ever willing to make that move. I think those are the things that bother me the most.
Those are the issues we have.
But if I'm being totally fair, it's not like he's a train wreck of a general manager. They had a third 50-win season with Terry Stotts. They clearly have put together a really nice team. It's just you have to care also about playoff success, and if you do not have that...
Taking the next step.
You got to go what Toronto did and take a move that nobody likes, but maybe it benefits you in the long run.
Right.
So that's always been my thing on Neil Olshey. We have a lot to get to, but coming up next, John Gruden tells his GM, just don't suck. Is that the right approach? We'll talk about that next.
Hey, coming up at crunch time, let's talk some Masters because the leaderboard looks great. Also, there was a crazy scene from Zach Johnson we have not talked about yet. Also, it didn't count. We'll explain.
I've had people, I've done what he's done before.
You've done, you pulled one of those off?
Yeah, and people have been like, well, there's one. And I'm always like, that shouldn't count, but evidently maybe this is the new rule
right
now. It doesn't count.
Yeah, so we'll get to that coming up in 10 minutes. It's something that all of us have done at some point or another on a tee box, and he did it at the Masters, which was hilarious. His response was great, too. So we'll get to that coming up in 10 minutes. You know I love my boy John Gruden.
Mm-hmm.
Big year coming for him down in the Bay Area.
Is it when you get a 10-year deal, is it really a big year for you?
It's big year too.
Can't imagine they're firing him before Vegas.
Not much pressure there. Well, Mike Mayock is their GM, which is an interesting move. He was a TV guy for the NFL Network for a long time. And other than, why am I blanking on the name? John Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Have we seen any other TV guys jump right into the GM sweepstakes like that?
Matt Millen.
Okay. That's a good one.
That was the only, I was trying to think of ones outside of Matt Millen, and I can't come up with one.
Yeah. So it's a kind of a unique hiring. You don't see it very often. They hired Mike Mayock. And look, we all know.
Didn't Steve Kerr do that? Didn't he go from TV
to
then
coaching,
to the
yeah.
GM? No.
He was a GM.
He was the Suns GM.
That's right.
And then he went to coaching.
He traded for Shaq.
That's right. So we've seen it in the NBA, I guess.
He was TV, GM, TV, coach. That was Steve Kerr's timeline.
That's a little back and forth. Well, look, we all know John Gruden is actually the GM in Oakland, too, which is what kind of makes this funny. He's the one that ultimately calls all the shots, but Mike Mayock is still there. They had a funny back and forth recently because the NFL draft is a couple of weeks away, and Gruden was asked what he's told his general manager about just kind of draft strategies, what are they going to do that weekend, all that stuff, and Gruden said, quote, I told him, don't mess it up, dude. I took a lot of slings to get you 3 first-round picks. I love this.
It's a very John Gruden type response.
I love this. Mike Mayock had a lot to say about it, too. He told the story as well. Do we have the audio? So here's Mike Mayock.
John keeps telling me, don't mess it up, dude. I took a lot of slings to get you 3 first-round picks. 4 of the first 35 picks gives you an opportunity to consider all those scenarios multiple times. And again, that's why we're opening up the line of communications with all the teams around the league. We need to be nimble. And nimble means, depending on what the situation is, to be able to react quickly according to the situation and make the right decision.
Let me ask you this question. He's not wrong. Gruden's not wrong. Don't screw this up, dude. Like, come on.
This is a big draft.
Could the everyday NFL fan not screw this up? Is this set up to where this is pretty hard to screw up? They have obvious needs. Some of those needs, it's a deep draft for those said needs.
Right.
I just, sometimes GMs, there's a lot that goes into the GM job in all sports that we don't understand, like the amount of hours and time these dudes put in. Right. I mean, it's 16-hour days. Okay. But sometimes there's other moments where I'm like, you can't screw this up. And then you watch a team and you're like, they screwed it up.
How did they screw that up?
Is this a unscrew-up-able no. draft for Mike Mayock?
Where do you go with the first pick?
Defense.
What if they don't? Boom, screwed up. Like, I saw a stat. I was reading about this last night when I saw this headline because I couldn't stop laughing about it. And there was a stat that there were, I believe, 6 individual players last year in the National Football League, 6 guys, single guys, that had more sacks than the entire Oakland Raiders team.
That's what happens when you trade your best pass rusher like a month before the season starts.
I think they only currently have 3 defensive ends on their roster as is. A bit of a positional need there. I think we can all agree. So, yeah, I think if they go out.
Get defensive linemen. There's a million of them in this draft.
I'm saying if they don't take one with, what are they taking, 4, right? Isn't that their first pick, the 4th pick?
Yeah.
Yep.
If they take Kyler Murray or Haskins or something at number 4, boom, you screwed it up.
Well, I think the only way it gets screwed up is if Mark Davis or John Gruden starts. Like, if they all work out their plan, Gruden tells them this is the focus. This is where we have the biggest need. This is where there's the most talent in the first round, and they all do it. And then it gets to draft day, and Davis and Gruden start monkeying with them.
Like, let's paint the scenario here then. They're on the clock. It's draft day. Nobody wants to trade with them. Let's make this super easy for everyday NFL fan. Mike Mayock is in.
Joe Schmo, you're in. You've watched a ton of football your whole life.
Am I Kevin Costner right now?
Yes. You can't. There's no trade. Teams don't want to move into the fourth pick. That it's off the table, right? So you don't have to worry about those phone calls. You just have the picks where you're at. Would you screw it up? Or do you think you would pick the right pick?
I think I would pick the right pick.
And that's my point is, yeah. I think some teams are just in obvious positions where you like, don't do that. And GMs do it. That's why it's like, we can make the whole armchair quarterback jokes and we do that to ourselves and listeners will do that to us and we'll do it to other people on Twitter. But the reality is sometimes the GM's job is really not that hard. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's take the Colts.
It's an obvious choice in certain spots.
I respect the hell out of Chris Ballard and the Colts right now, right? Andrew Luck is healthy. That makes a world of difference. He got offered a great opportunity, and he knew he wasn't taking a quarterback. So, you know you're taking Quentin Nelson. You're going to get some picks in return to trade with the Jets. You can trade back. You can still have the guy you wanted to take anyway. It's a fairly obvious move.
Yeah, it's an easy move to make.
Right?
Yeah, in certain situations, it's an easy move. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Just take a defensive end with your fourth pick, and then it can all come together from there. And it was interesting, though, reading some of the other comments that he had, because he said other GMs, he's running to them around certain functions, a combine, that kind of stuff, and other GMs realizing his role that he used to play in TV are trying to get hints out of him about where he's going to go, like asking him like they used to when he worked in TV for his evaluation on certain players. There was one telling thing that he said, though, is that he loves drafting in like the middle rounds, if you will. He loves going in like the 40 to 60 range. And the Raiders have their first four picks are inside the top 30, and then they don't have one for a couple of rounds. So they're really front loaded. So a lot of people think are trying to read between the lines of his latest quote saying that they're going to move. I think they have the 24th and the 27th and then the 34th pick. That they're going to try and move one of those, pick up some, you know, third rounders, if you will, and trade down a little bit because they have so many needs that they need more players than that.
Yeah.
So a little draft strategy talk there. But John Gruden tells him, don't screw it up, right?
Now, will he screw it up?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think he will.
I think Mayock's a smart enough guy to
not. Let's also be honest. John Gruden's making this choice. John Gruden calls the shots in
Oakland.
You don't
think he's trusting Mike Mayock to make a pick?
I think they'll come to an agreement, but Gruden will turn him down if he wants to take somebody else.
I think Gruden gets the number four overall pick. That's Gruden's pick.
Hmm.
Then after that, I think it's...
Which is scary because...
Johnny boy, don't screw that up.
What if Kyler Murray's on the board? Probably not going to happen, but... So there you go. Raiders have four picks in the top 35. Gruden tells his GM to not screw it up. Let's get into the Masters. Day two at Augusta. The leaderboard is just fantastic. Tiger Woods is out there in a mock turtleneck again. He's chewing gum. He's got it rolling. He's going on the back nine. But something happened on the tee box earlier today. I think a lot of us have probably done this once or twice. A, did you know the rule? B, has it happened to you? And C, how did it all go down? We'll tell you. Masters update. Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I did not make it this morning.
No days off.
All right, I was up watching golf.
No days off.
I wasn't a huge fan of the morning feature groups today.
Yeah, so why didn't you go work out?
Okay, I still wanted to watch the Masters. But yesterday you had Tiger going in the morning, so that was kind of fun. And he was playing pretty good, so he was one of the feature guys. Today you had Phil... But Rose isn't having a good weekend, so he was in the feature group. Justin Thomas got it going a little bit. Masters going on. Day two. It's been fun. Something happened earlier today. I don't know if I've ever seen this at a big tournament. I've seen this all over your local golf course because I think we've all done this at one point or another.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst you've ever like just randomly screwed up on a golf course? 55305. So this day two of the Masters, Zach Johnson, former Masters champion, Zach Johnson, stepped up to the tee box in the 13th hole, the tail end of Amen Corner, and he tees up his ball. He's, you know, all right, stretching out a little bit. 13th, by the way, is an interesting tee box because it is one, it's right after 12. The 12th is the short par three over water, And then the 13th tee box is tucked behind the 12th green. So there's no patrons within 200 feet. Like, everybody is over on the other side behind the tee box from the previous hole. And then they line the fairway of the 13th. But there's nobody around that tee box. You're just kind of tucked in back by yourself. It's kind of a cool little spot in the course. So Zach Johnson tees up his ball. He takes a practice swing. And he hit his ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this and we were all like, wait, what? Huh? So he let out, because there's cameras back there, obviously, behind him when they're hitting. He let out a couple of cuss words, turned around, kind of like, oh, God, you guys got that. He was playing with Kuchar, and I can't remember who else he's playing with, but he turned to them and said, it's okay, you guys can laugh. That was pretty funny. Like, they poke fun at each, like, it was a really funny moment. So my initial thought was, I didn't know this rule. I figured, like, this is a major tournament. He just hit the ball, whether he meant to or not. How is he going to recover from this? Because the ball hit off the tee marker and probably went, what would you say, 7 or 8 yards. Like, it was still on the tee box right in front of him. But no, it did not count. Under the USGA rules, the ball isn't considered to be in play until it's actually hit from the tee area. And because he didn't have the intention of hitting the ball, he was allowed to re-tee and hit again.
Which, look, I think most of us have either done this or been with a person in a group who has done this. The joke is always, well, there's one.
One. Everybody, we all, there's one. That one guy. I just did it last time I played.
Yeah.
And I did it to my buddy Scott, and he turned around, and he's like, there's always one guy in the group.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, I'm going to be that guy.
But with that being said, we don't normally count that, right? Like, if you did that, you know, you're lining up the club. I've done this before where you do kind of like the hole, it goes back and comes right to the ball and stops.
Right.
I've bumped the ball off and it's like, oh, there's the one, but nobody counts it.
Right.
I wish this would have counted though, because they're professional golfers and I'm not.
Like, how do you do this in a major tournament, man? He's standing there at the tee box.
Yeah, how do you, what I haven't done is I haven't taken a practice swing and hitting the ball on a practice swing. I step away enough to know I'm not going to hit the ball.
I've made fun of really bad golfers who have whiffed when they're actually trying to hit the ball and told them just count that as a practice swing. Like, I've done that.
I've done that, yeah.
But never, I'd never done that either. Like, where you're standing there and you're actually, because it wasn't a full length swing. He probably went 3/4 of the way back and was kind of just loosening it up a little bit and he hit it. But I've never done that.
But why doesn't this count for him?
Because there was no intent to hit the golf ball.
But he's a millionaire golfer. Like, you shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
I figured it would, and it was kind of exciting because I was excited to watch him play like a 3-wood or maybe a driver off, because it's a par 5. So you're talking about your first shot going 5 yards. You got 500 plus yards to go on your second shot, still on the tee box. Not to mention you have to pull his pants down, because we all know that rule.
I was going to say, I'd be more disappointed if Kuchar or them didn't go, pull your pants down.
Well, it ended up being really good news for him, because he re-teed, hit it 290 or something right down the middle, got on the green, two-putted for birdie. He ended up with a birdie on the hole.
All things considered, could have been much worse for him. Outside of the video going viral and everybody watching this going, what? He did what I did or what I've done? Outside of that, it didn't end too poorly.
By the way, Kevin Kisner, who continues to be just one of my favorite players out there, was asked about this today when he got off the course. He wasn't playing with them, but he heard about it. He said, quote, I didn't see it, but I heard it. Zach's eyes were as big as they've ever seen him. His jaw dropped. Kisner was asked if he'd ever done this before. And he said he's done it, just not in a competitive round. He said, quote, only if I've been drinking.
So when Kisner's hammered on his own,
I'll knock that one off. So that was a really funny scene. If you haven't seen like the GIF or the video of it, go watch. There's like a 12-second one where you can hear his quote right afterwards.
Right.
He drops a, oh, bleep. Like, kind of freaks out for a second.
Now, with that being said, the group today, the groups, I should say, and how the leaderboard is lining up, I've always been one that's like, what is the right conversation for golf if there's not something wild that happens, especially on radio? I think my only conversation for me that I could really say, okay, valuable to listeners, is the leaderboard right now is sweet, and it's lining up perfectly for everybody to want to watch this on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that don't, and it's Sunday for you, you sit down Sunday, and if this leaderboard can hold somewhat close to what it is today, right now, you're going to be in for a treat of a finish.
It's going to be awesome. The leaderboard is great. Like, you did look at Molinari, got it going today. He was 5 under. Jason Day was 5 under as well. So they're both at 7 under. Brooks Koepka got a birdie early and then stumbled for a while and then regained control. He finished one under on the day. So you got those guys and Justin Harding, who nobody cares about, also with seven under.
Well, he just hit right off the tee box on 18 into the woods.
Oh, that was him. Yeah. So he's going to not be at seven under anymore. Give that some time. He's on 18. But then you have like this collection of guys at 600, Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott. You got Ian Poulter, who I can't stand. John Rahm, both at 5 under. Kuchar, Mickelson, both at 4. DeChambeau fell off. He was 3 over today, but he's still 3 under for the tournament. Justin Thomas is 3 under. Tiger's 3 under. Ricky Fowler's 3 under. So I mean, these are all guys within 4 shots of the leader. And you give it 9 holes on Saturday, it could look different. But everybody's within striking distance.
I think if you took Tiger out of it and then Day, I like Jason Day. I always kind of have. But if you took Tiger out and said Tiger's not going to win it, I might be rooting for Brooks Koepka to win
because of the comments,
because of the Chambly comments and the reaction to that from everybody in the golf world.
He was pretty funny yesterday after his round, because that was even something that I remember hearing the comments and being like, yeah, he lost 25 pounds for nothing. His game sucked. He had a quote recently where he said he had to go to the, like, he was feeling so bad and was not getting his strength and energy back, even though he was putting back on weight, that he went and did like blood tests. He thought he had a disease. Like, he was trying to figure out what was wrong with him. And his game was suffering. Like, he's been terrible this year. And now he's, of course, tied for the lead going into Saturday. But he had a funny comment saying, I can't lose weight. I can't gain weight. Like, I can't do anything without being criticized, which is partially true.
It's very true. I mean, he got destroyed on TV and all over the internet for losing weight and because he hadn't played well. It's kind of a redemption for him in this tournament. I know some people might not be big Brooks Koepka fans. I know personality-wise, he's about as entertaining as drying paint.
Yeah, he's cardboard.
He's fun to watch, though, when he golfs.
He is. He's damn impressive to, like, not be playing at your best and then show up and put together back-to-back really good days at Augusta is impressive. One other note, the stock that you bought turned out to be a decent stock. Wasn't looking good yesterday, but Jordan Spieth got it going today.
What's he at?
Spieth finished at 1 under. So he was 3 over yesterday.
He was 4 over at one point.
He bogeyed his first hole today, and the projected cut line was at 4 over, so it was looking like he might miss the cut, and then he ended up pouring in a 4 under. 68 today, so he's at 1 under, so maybe a little too far off the lead at 6 shots right now, but still technically alive. So Spieth got it going today. He's still around. Rory McIlroy, if you're looking for him, he's got it at 1 under now. So a great leaderboard going into Saturday. That's all you can ask for. I had to tweet out the Randy Marsh computer one. I mean, that's just how I'm feeling. Yeah, good leaderboard.
There are some listeners, by the way, have no idea who Randy Marsh is and what you're talking about.
Well, if you do, I hope you appreciate that joke because it's awesome. Okay, there you go. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Coming up in the final hour of the show, we got to talk about this awesome weekend a little bit more. So much going on, continuing tonight, and then tomorrow, and then obviously Sunday is going to be the big day. We'll get back into and give our final thoughts on that Portland-OKC game one. Who wins game one? Can the Blazers get it at home and avoid falling down early in the series on Sunday at 12:30? We got to Sprague the line. Don't forget that coming up at the bottom of the hour, so get your fake sponsors in at 55305. And don't look now, like, this is going to be off of most people's radar this weekend. There's a big series in Seattle.
There is.
Huh?
Jeff Passan wrote about the Mariners.
He did.
And now everybody is taking the Mariners right? Seriously.
This is a national ESPN article. It's out there. The Astros are in town this weekend. Lots to get to in the final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.